Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Leah M., recovered compulsive overeater from New Jersey, and your moderator for today. Today is Sunday, December 8th, 2024. The share ID numbers for Friday, December 6th, are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 21,975. That's 21975. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 21,976. That's 21976. This morning, A Vision for You presents Promises, Promises. Overeaters Anonymous stands for the proposition that the 12 steps gives us freedom from the bondage of our disease of compulsive overeating and sets us on a new path, clearing the way to the promises of a new way of life. The 12 steps are designed to bring about a spiritual awakening that removes the obsession and brings about our recovery. For the spiritual awakening to occur, the 12 steps should be worked in the prescribed order, one step at a time, beginning with the first step. Each step flows logically from the one before it and builds upon its principles. We have heard of the 9-step promises found on pages 83 and 84 of the Big Book. There are, however, an abundance of promises in the Big Book. The promises are found all through the pages of the text. Each step the Big Book contains has conditions, promises, and prayers. There are many promises found through the pages of the text. These are all promises or predictions of mental, emotional, and spiritual changes that will occur in us as we progress through the program of recovery and trudge the road of happy destiny. Joining us today to elaborate on this very topic is Larry K. from Illinois. Larry is dedicated to living the 12-step way of life, which includes service to others through his intensive work with compulsive overeaters and carrying the message of recovery. And it's with great pleasure and great appreciation to welcome Larry K. to the line. Good morning.
Good morning, Leah. Thank you so much for your service. Appreciate it. I'm Larry K., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I live in Chicago. And I'm delighted to try to carry a message. I mean, part of my reason for carrying the message this morning is as a promise to myself, right? I want to stay sober today. And I used to have an early sponsor that would tell me, you know, when I would call him each morning, he would say, "Yeah, I'm sober, but it's only, you know, whatever it was. It was 6 a.m. He said. Now this guy had been at that time sober for 30 some years, and I used to think that was kind of a joke, but he. You know, but he was carrying a message, and in part, just as the Big Book describes, you know, that we carry message. We do it for fun. We do it for free. But we have to do this because we need to keep sober. So don't ever misunderstand. I'm here to do service, and I want, you know, hopefully you'll get something from the presentation this morning. We'll see. Time will tell. But I'm doing this also for myself, so that I can stay sober today. And we're going to talk about the promises. You know, as Leah had mentioned, yes, there's many promises throughout the book, and I'll absolutely get into that and touch on them. And I remember, well, someone had mentioned, yeah, it sounds like an encouraging presentation, promises, promises, right? And it will be. It will be encouraging. But I'm going to start out, it may be a little dark, but I'm going to start out because I'm going to share some of my story about promises in the hopes that we can transition and kind of see where we can get from here. And so, you know, when I was 8 years old, a promise was made to me that sounded really good. And it was more than a welcome promise when I think back all these decades ago, right? And it was repeatedly made, and I was and I, by adults, and I was desperate to feel better. And that promise was delivered by powers, plural, greater than myself. Certainly these were, you know, were adults, parents and other adults, that they, and they loved me. They absolutely loved me. And in this child's eye, you know, these promises, I had hoped that they were true. I trusted that they were. And what was that promise? And they essentially said the same thing. They said, you know, Larry, everything will be okay. Everything will get better. Excuse me. Everything will get better. And it all will be well. And when I look back at it at that time, and for many years, they were wrong, because when my parents were divorced, there was immeasurable pain. You know, when we moved some 2,000 miles away from, you know, from Chicago to Southern California, away from my father, that, you know, and away from what was very familiar to me, school and friends and extended family and safety and security, you know, that that was, it was excruciatingly painful to this 8-year-old little boy, right? And to be introduced to a stepfather for the very first time, given that, you know, that he proved to be ill-equipped to be a first-time father figure to 4 children he inherited, right, under the age of 10, that was, you know, that was painful beyond words from my experience. And then, you know, to experience some of the physical and emotional abuse over those years was a horror, and I wouldn't wish that on anyone. And so this experience of mine, and the reason I mention it, and hopefully it'll make some sense, it, you know, in its totality taught me something at that time. It taught me that, you know, it taught me a lot of lies that didn't seem like lies at that time. It taught me that life is cruel, that people in it are cruel. You will not be protected. It taught me that, you know, carrying daily fear is what this life has to offer. And I thought to myself, no thanks. You know, it taught me that if you're big enough and you're strong enough and you are afforded the rights in society to have power over others, you know, you can be among the wolves of society rather than the sheep. And that's why, you know, I suspect we have adults that still, you know, may bully others and assert their authority to hurt others. And even though they're blind to that condition. And so all that said, before we talk about the promises of this practical program of spiritual action, because it offers some tremendous promises, you know, just allow me to delve into, you know, what's a critical component that paves the way for these promises to unfold. And that critical component is a 5-letter word, and it's not a bad word. It's called trust. Trust. Because the degree to which I'm able to trust the process that's going to lead to a spiritual transformation, which is a revolutionary psychic change. The book calls it many things: spiritual awakening, psychic change, personality change. But the degree to which I can trust that process, when there's so many reasons not to trust when we come to these rooms, will mark the urgency and the commitment that I'm going to invest in following the instructions in the text precisely. Leah talked about that. I've learned from folks like her and many others that yes, I'm going to have to follow these instructions precisely. Because remember, the text in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is a roadmap for how to work the steps. If we want to build a foundation of recovery, we need a blueprint that lays out the precise plan for getting these results. Now, if there's no trust, then there's no commitment on the level necessary to experience permanent, sustainable recovery. And so if I unpack this a bit more, we can see different examples. Trust involves many things. It involves a degree of vulnerability, right? For example, you know, entrusting a coworker is going to follow through on a promise to help with a project. You know, we run the risk of the possibility that colleague will renege at the last minute. Have you ever been in that situation? You know, then, you know, I'm going to be left holding the bag. And trusting a romantic partner to remain faithful opens a person up to the risk of crushing betrayal. Trusting that those who care about us, people that we really value, that we depend on, and that we love, will not abandon us leaves us feeling vulnerable as well. So I don't think it's an understatement to say that for most of us, when we arrive at the rooms, we come with trust issues on some level. And frankly, it's like we come here carrying a bowling ball of fear chained around our necks. And let's face it, we often have a lifetime of injustice and broken promises and calamity and disappointments. And it appears that life has let us down. And we experience tremendous pain with that vicious cycle of compulsive overeating. And on top of all of that, you know, if you're like me, we come to the rooms and we don't even trust ourselves. Because despite our best efforts, you know, in my heart of hearts, you know, I felt as though I had a long history of continually disappointing myself. I mean, I can't do what I desperately want to do. I can't eat moderately. And I can't stop doing what I don't want to do. I can't stop binge eating. I can't stop restricting. I can't stop engaging in bulimic behaviors. And in this face of mistrust of myself, all I know is that by the time that I arrive to these rooms, to you good people, that noose around my neck of this disease had begun to tighten to the point where I felt utterly hopeless. And that's exactly where I needed to be. And with all that baggage, at the same time, we arrive to OA desperately wanting to feel hopeful. And we see people around us, many who are hopeful. You'll come to Envision for You and you'll hear people share with great hope and conviction. They've been pulled from the quicksand. You know, is there a way out of this seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body? You told me it was a seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body. Now, all that said, am I treating these promises as maybes? Am I treating them as maybes? I remember a patient of mine once asked me a very simple question related to like a job search she was pursuing. And she said, you know, I told the recruiter I send my resume today. It's okay if I send it tomorrow, right? Wrong. No, that's not right. You know, and so I think we can see that true promises seem increasingly viewed as maybes, as breakable, because we live in a time where we can make and break promises with the convenience of a text message, instead of being encouraged to commit with a yes or a no. You know, social media allows us to make half-hearted choices of, I don't know, interested, or you can click on maybe, instead of being taught to do all it takes to show up. It's like society gives us permission to keep our options open. You know, I'm just going to keep my options open. And in a world that allows for broken promises, how am I? I mean, you're asking me to trust the promises of this practical program of spiritual action, the promises that are offered. Well, I suppose that if one's literally drowning and a flimsy, tattered old life preserver falls out of the sky and it falls in my direction, you know, perhaps it's a good thing that I don't have the time or the desire to evaluate whether I trust if this is a reasonable solution to save my life. Because page 28 in the big book describes it so well. It says, we in our turn sought the same escape, the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed, it was just tattered really, has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. The pioneers of this program, I don't know, it seems to me, they knew people like you and me. In fact, in describing himself, you know, Bill Wilson could have used any of our names, really, on page 8 when he said, you know, here he was in the grips of this disease. And he says, quote, no words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretched all around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. And here's another. In fact, the first time I read the following paragraph on page 151, I thought people had been following me around. because he described it so well, so poetically. It says on 151, the less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. As we became subjects of King Alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that his loneliness settled down, it thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval. Momentarily, we did. Then would come oblivion and the awful awakening to face the hideous four horsemen. Terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand, and I understood. So speaking of the promises, here's one that doesn't explicitly appear in the big book, and I'm going to get to ones that do appear in the big book, in the text. You know, I'm going to make it to you, as was made to me many years ago by I'm also in another program, it was a guy in AA, and this guy was in organized crime. He spent years in a penitentiary. And to this day, though, I think back, it's one of the wisest, yet simple promises made to me by someone in program. And he said simply, Larry, you don't have to live like this anymore. You don't have to live like this anymore. Now, wow, that's a promise that seemed like a fantasy to me at the time. But he had my attention. I listened to his words. And I said, you know, I said to him, okay, but what exactly do you do? And he said, if you do what I do, then you'll know what I do. If you do what I do, then you'll know what I do. You know, and he was throwing out the fishing line, right? I've heard her say that before. We throw out the fishing line. I don't walk to the end of the pier with a club. Well, we throw out the fishing line. That's what he did. And then, unfortunately, if you're like me, we often cling to good feelings, and that caused me lots of trouble. And when I clung to clinging to feeling good, we tend to avoid any activity that brings us into contact with difficult feelings. But hence, we avoid and postpone taking action. Because the whole darn program, if you're new, I'll just tell you right now, this whole program is about taking action. It's all about taking action by working the steps. Therefore, the first step to make yourself take action is to give up on feeling good. You know, the more I cling to feeling good first, the harder it's going to be for me to take action. I have to make room for discomfort. If I want these promises to unfold in my life, I have to make room for discomfort. And as long as I struggle with my own feelings of discomfort, I'm going to struggle with taking action. As long as I struggle with feelings of discomfort, I will struggle with taking action, and that's just the nature of the beast. So what I tried to do with the help of many people in this program is, instead of making bad feelings with, you know, the enemy, I allowed myself to have them, because I'm just going to have them. Now, there are approximately 150 promises within our primary text. You know, some explicit, some implicit, some, you know, mentioned. And in the book entitled Alcoholics Anonymous, if you're new to OA, we lovingly refer to that text as the big book. Now, we're not going to focus on all 150 promises today, but what I will say from the outset, and you'll just have to accept this as an article of faith, or not, that among the 150 promises in the text, as far as I can discern, only 14 of those promises address the cessation of alcohol, or in our case, our alcoholic foods. So that means that if that's true, or even close to true, that means that less than 10% of what's promised by having a complete psychic change has anything at all to do with food. And I don't know about you, but if 90% of the benefits associated with this spiritual transformation deal directly with something other than food, then it certainly stands to reason for me that my main problem is something other than food. In other words, food is not my problem. Because if it were, then abstinence alone would be my solution. And it's not. It's not. So, and because the text reminds me on page 23, the main problem, it says, centers in my mind rather than my body. And with that said, you know, let's dive into some of the promises laid out in our text, because as Leah said, the nine step promises, they give you the impression that that's the promises. You know, the first thing to recognize is the promises of the steps are significantly more than just the nine step promises. And, you know, the first meetings that I attended, you know, they were read at all the meetings, and I listened to what was presented and what wasn't presented. And someone once said to me, you know, God's promises are all on condition of humble obedience. Humble obedience. And most of the early meetings that I attended ended with the reading of the promises from the bottom, as Leah said, of page 83 through page 84. And it would be easy to believe those are the promises of the program of spiritual action, and they are not. So what are they then? And we'll get to them. They are the promises of the ninth step only. And I remember hearing them, as I said, again and again, and frankly, I felt cheated. I missed a certain detail. It says, you know, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, what phase? The amends phase. So if you're hearing this for the first time, you know, my apologies, but they're talking about halfway through the ninth step where you clean up your past. You can expect to start to experience the nine step promises. And instead, I thought they meant like halfway through, I don't know, the meeting, halfway through putting the food down. I was always halfway through putting the food down, halfway through sweeping the floor or putting out chairs in the meeting room. You know, I felt like taking my $3 back. Remember when we had meetings, in-person meetings? Perhaps you still have those. You'd throw some money in the basket. I felt cheated. And it turns out that there are promises on more steps than not. And let's take a walk through the literature a little bit. I'll touch on a few. You know, the step two, there are promises. And one of the first ones for step two on page 46, it says, we found that as soon as we lay aside prejudice and expressed even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God, it says in the book. So I don't even need to comprehend this prompt. As soon as I can lay aside prejudice, and the steps will help me, as I move through the steps, they will help me to come to believe that I will be able to lay aside prejudice and express a willingness to believe over time. You'll hear that in the stories of people over and over again. And it goes on in step two on 46. It says, much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. So all I need to do, I don't need your conception. I love when I hear people talk about they've got their own conception. Beautiful, wonderful. That's exactly what the program is telling you to do. That's what Ebby told Bill, and it's been passed on, and we continue to pass it on. No one is telling you what to believe. It's just, for me, I liked, maybe you do, maybe you don't, but I like the idea. It just can't be me. Thus, it's a power greater than me. But what that, you know, does it involve theology? Does it involve religion? Does it not? Is it, there are all sorts of different aspects to one's belief system on a power greater than themselves, and that is more than sufficient. The big book is consistent. That is more than sufficient to affect this change. Now it goes on to 47, still in the second step here. As soon as a man or a woman can say that he does believe, or is even willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. And then on 55, with this, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. So it's giving us, in step two, a series of promises that unfold. Just open. We just need to be open to this. Have we complicated the heck out of it? In my opinion, we have. Have we taken, have sponsors, in my experience, taken an authority role to where they're determining if the person is coming to believe or believes? No, that's not our job as a sponsor. It's just not our job. This is between that person and God. All you can do is share your own experience by navigating through these steps. Now, when we look at the step three promises, well, on page 75, it says, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. So it's telling us there that, you know, what position am I going to take? I'm going to get out of the driver's seat playing God, where I've got to manipulate, where I've got to control everything, where I've got to make all decisions, where I've got to get you to follow my script, where I've got, you know, it's exhausting. And the only thing that gives me relief in that state of being, in my case, is food. And for many of us, so many other things and behaviors. It gives us that sense of ease and comfort when people are not following Larry's rules. So I've got to knock that off. I've got to take a new position. And when I do, these remarkable things will follow. Now, there are other promises here that I'm going to read now, and it talks about in step five. I'm going to move ahead to step five. Step four. It says on page 68. So we're in the fourth step where we're beginning to take a look at ourselves. We're beginning to put pen to paper, right? And we're beginning to look at our primary character defects, our resentments, our fears, our harms done to others, our sex conduct. And when we consider on page 68, it says, as we're doing this, just to the extent that we do what we think he, capital H, would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? Prior to that, there was always calamity. There was never serenity. Never serenity. But when I rely on this power, I see to this very day that as calamity comes, because it comes on a regular basis, just as regularly it comes as it used to, but I'm able to match that with serenity. Page 70, it says, we have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies, for we look on them as sick people. So I don't look at them, this promise on page 70, I don't look at them from, you know, from a mountaintop. I don't look down upon them. Oh boy, do we see that a lot of times, people that get all high and mighty and preachy and so forth. No, I'm one among many. And being with that humility that this is the God of my understanding has given me that humility most of the time. I'm still human. But, you know, just to the extent that I do that, I have tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all people, even our enemies. We look on them as sick people. We don't look on them as we're better than them, but we look on them as being in the same state we were in. Now the step five promises, you know, we're going to share with God, ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And it says specifically on page 75, once we've taken this step, you know, withholding nothing, right? If we're going to withhold some things, okay, the promises might not unfold in this case. But once we've taken this step withholding nothing, right from the text, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. See the promises cascading down? Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. That feeling that the drink problem, the food problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel that we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Now, I will tell you in my experience, that particular promise on page 75, when I was not following the steps in sequence, when I was leaving things out, when I was still trying to run the show, when I was still manipulating and controlling and so forth, it didn't matter that I was following this step, but I wasn't following the steps precisely, right? I wasn't following these steps precisely. So those promises were not unfolding. This isn't how many times have I worked the steps? Oh, I've already worked the steps. I worked the steps as if it's something that we do once. No, this is a way of life. We learn a spiritual skill set. We learn a way of life. And as we learn the way of life, what I have found over the years is the steps begin to unfold. And there is peace. There's serenity. There's a calm attitude, even in the storm. Because guess what? Hold your ears. No, I guess I won't use a bad word here. The bleep storm is either in your life now or it's on its way. Okay? The storm is either in your life right at this very minute or it's on its way. But what I have learned with this program, so too, is the ability with my higher power's help to transcend and move beyond those things and be of service even in the midst of the storm. When those seas come and it starts building up and the fear comes up and all the human emotions come up, or someone betrays you, or another human being disappoints you, or someone triggers you in some way, right? We all have different little trigger points. And someone triggers you in a certain way. There's a little storm. But in the midst of that storm with recovery, one of the promises show me that there are things that I did not know how to handle except with ingesting food to calm myself, that now I can handle. I shared before, and if you've heard me share this, but I'll share it again. Most people know their abstinence state. And I'm stealing this from Leia. I steal things from giants because they resonate with me. You know, most people, she says it much better than I ever could. But it's a truth for me. Most people know their abstinence state. And we applaud that abstinence state. We're grateful for God doing for you what you couldn't do for yourself. And we applaud that. Because we know that this works. We've seen it in our own lives. But I tell you what. And in AA, there's a tradition of giving a coin for, a day, 30 days. I had many 30-day coins in AA. Had a drawer full of those. But anyway, I digress. But we even have a tradition some in AA of coins for a year, 5 years, or 20 years, whatever it is, different periods of time. And we also applaud, and you come up and you feel all high and mighty sometimes, unless you have recovery. you give all credit to where credit is due to your higher power. But anyway, here's where I'm going to steal from Leia. But I'll use my own twist. I don't remember the day I stopped hating my mother, but it came. It snuck up on me. I don't remember the day that I stopped hating the fact that she didn't protect me, that little 8-year-old boy, right? I don't remember the day, but it came. And it didn't come on my time, because God has a timing and a rhythm for all of us, but it came. Because we live life reflecting, we live life going forward. But, but we reflect back. And Bill's story, he's reflecting back. I'm reflecting back. I don't know the day. You didn't give me a coin on the day. I couldn't tell you the day. I don't celebrate the day. I don't know the day that I stopped hating my sister. Why did I hate my sister? A beautiful mother. She's a wonderful person. If you met my sister or my mother, frankly, I think you guys would like them, to be honest with you. But my sister, for me, for many years, represented my mother. She seemed very selfish, and here's my judgment, dripping with judgment. She seemed very selfish and self-centered, just like my mother appeared to me. Right? I was playing God in that judgment. But I don't remember the day, nor did you give me a coin, nor do we celebrate the day that I stopped hating my sister. We have a good relationship today. Not a perfect, nor with any human being do I have a perfect relationship, but I have good relationships today and people that love me, and I love them right back. So, these promises, they do unfold this way. So now back to the promises here, and I'm going to touch on, let me move on to the 9-step promises that we know. Now there's 12 of them in the 9-step. When we complete the 9-step, it says, page 83 bottom, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, remember, making amends, cleaning up our past. If we're painstaking about that phase, we will be amazed before we're halfway through making those amends. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. First time, I hope I'm not the only one, I read the word scale, I thought of a weight scale. They weren't talking about that in Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook on life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And we always say, are these extravagant promises? We think not. Right? They're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. And then the 10-step promises. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone. And this is 10-step promises start on page 84, I believe. We have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, even our food. By this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. It just comes. We're not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. Remember, the problem, we're the problem. Selfishness, self-centered is the root of that problem. And the problem is a disconnection from God, disconnection from a higher power. That problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. But we're neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Now I'm going to touch on the 11-step promises, or some of them. Page 87, what used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration we've come to rely upon it. So I saw with the 11-step, 10, 11, and 12, 10, I'm going to continue to seek out those defects that will come up. Okay, with step 11, keyword, improve. And as I improve, through what? Through prayer and meditation. The Big Book gives some very specific instructions on that. And we can expand that. And many of us do expand that over time. But when that happens, this inspiration comes. It just becomes a working part of the mind. I don't know where it comes from. It's a mystery to me. But nevertheless, my thinking will, as time passes, is more and more on the plane of inspiration. I've come to rely upon it. I know that it exists for me, and I give credit to God. And then step 12, first two paragraphs. I read them every morning. It's part of my morning practice. Here's a promise. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking, from eating, as intensive work with other alcoholics. I'm trying to work intensively right now. I do it one-on-one. I do it in many different ways. I don't think God cares, quite frankly, how I do it, the God of my understanding. But I do it with an understanding that I have to work intensively. I help people, guide them through the steps. I hold, here I'm going to steal from Leah again. But guess what? Tell you a secret. She probably stole some things along the way too. Okay, this is the only place we can steal things from others, right? Because there's not a creative thought in my head. But she once said, and it floored me, she said, it's like we're holding a lantern. We're holding a lantern for another sick and suffering compulsive overeater. We're walking out. Can you imagine? You're walking out in the dark, but you've been down this pathway before, right? And I'm holding the lantern, and you're right by me. You're right to the right of me, and we're walking. Oh, watch that step over there. Yeah. Let me, yeah, no, over here, there's going to be a slight incline. Yeah. And I hold that lantern. That's what we do for people. We hold a lantern. But don't think that I'm the power. You're not gonna have a spiritual awakening because of me, but I'll hold the lantern. I'm good at holding a lantern. So I work intensively with other alcoholics. And you know what? As it says on 89, it works when other activities fail. It works for me. It keeps me sober. And it tells me something more on 89. It goes on to say, to watch people recover. Holy moly, are you kidding me? To see them help others. To watch loneliness vanish. To see a fellowship grow up about you. To have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. There's a guy coming. I mean, God willing, there's a guy coming to the OA birthday party. I've been talking to this guy for years, many years. He came into program around the time I did, maybe even a little earlier than I did. And, you know, I've never met him in person. Never met this guy in person. But, you know, I say God willing, it's just my way of saying that we both plan to be at the OA birthday party, and I'm going to meet him in person. Are you kidding me? There's no better deal in town where I can see people recover, where I see loneliness vanish, where I make a host of friends, where, you know, even with calamities, even with disappointments in life, to see this fellowship grow up about you. What Leah and Melanie and so many others, I identify them, but they're cringing when I do that. But so many others that put this Vision for You thing together, I mean, it's just, what was their intent? To pass it on. They want to stay sober too. Like, I don't want to speak for them, but I think that's part of it too. But they have, you know, there are people that just go out of their way for other people because, yes, they want to stay sober as well, but they want people to have the opportunity to recover. And they do if we follow these instructions. And so you see the fellowship grow. I sent a picture to my sponsor the other day as I was driving around the city aimlessly, and I found myself near Swedish Covenant Hospital. And Harlan will tell you that, oh, Larry, I remember. Harlan's good with a story. He'll tell you that I remembered, you know, 100, 200, close to 300 people would show up to Swedish Covenant Hospital. Now, yeah, they bust some of those folks in from treatment centers that weren't working and all this kind of stuff. The reason I mentioned Swedish Covenant Hospital in Chicago was because that meeting that was just busting at the seams years ago, that meeting dried up and went away. Now, I'm not casting aspersions or judgment. I'm just saying that there are some promises when we don't work the steps. There's some promises that, you know, implicit in not working the steps. Yeah, death and things like that. You know, destruction. This disease will take you out. It's permanent, progressive, and it's grave. It's fatal. And so that meeting, when they stopped carrying the message laid out in this book, this simple program, and when they complicated it, perhaps people weren't getting well, and eventually the meeting dried up, and it went away entirely. I don't know what it's doing today or not. And there's nothing special about Swedish Covenant Hospital in Chicago. I'm just saying, I'm drawing the distinction between why is Vision for You still growing and still doing well? Because people are getting well. It's not a popularity thing. It's just people are getting well. Are all people in Vision getting well? No. Not everyone's following the steps. Not everyone understands entire abstinence. Not everyone is ready to or has, you know, understands the twofold nature of their disease, both the abnormal physical reaction and the allergy and the obsession of the mind. And that the steps treat that obsession of the mind and bring you into conscious contact with your higher power. And that's what this is all about, having a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening sufficient to drive out this obsession. And many other promises unfold, beautiful promises that have nothing to do with food or alcohol or behaviors necessarily, right? So I mention that because, and I'm going to wrap up Leah's applauding, with a few words on living with passionate commitment, because for me, sobriety is really a commitment to a way of life. a God-centered way of life. And what I'll say is, while active in our addiction, as I started, many of us were incapable of making and fulfilling commitments to ourselves and others. You know, a commitment, to my way of thinking, is a set of promises, and these promises aim to a certain end. And the crucial thing about commitments is that they can only be fulfilled by actions. Actions are going to speak louder than my words. So in this program for me, I think this is consistent with what it says in our text. My commitment is to implement the steps in order to be brought into congruence with the power greater than myself. In other words, I am trusting, even in the face of mistrust, I am trusting that these actions will bring about a transformation where I move from a self-centered consciousness to a God-centered consciousness. And I won't need the food anymore. So where I'm going to close is on page 181 with a quote from Dr. Bob Smith. He was one of the co-founders of AA, as you know. And I'm going to read it from page 81, or 181, in Dr. Bob's Nightmare. Let me flip on over to 181. He says at the bottom paragraph, if you think you are an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. If you still think you are strong enough to beat the game alone, that is your affair. But if you really and truly want to quit drinking, to quit eating, for good and all, and sincerely feel that you must have some help, we know that we have an answer for you. It never fails. If you go about it with one half the zeal you have been in the habit of showing when you are getting another drink. And he says, of course, he uses the term Heavenly Father, but I'll just say God or higher power. Your higher power will never let you down. And Leah, with that, I'm going to close and pass. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Larry, so much for this inspiring, rich, and profound presentation this morning. So very beautiful. Thank you. Quite a message of hope and possibility. Thank you. The share ID for today, 21,977. That's 21977. To listen again to this powerful presentation from Larry Kay. Larry's contact information will be given at the conclusion of this recording, so stay tuned for that. We will now transition to a question and answer segment. You can pose a question to Larry by pressing star 1 to unmute. I need your name, including the first letter of your last name.
Jen B. Ginger
Jen
C.
B. Ginger.
Panayeta no. R.
Gotcha. Panayeta.
Natalie S.
Natalie.
Pete B.
Got you, Pete. Star 1 to unmute. Thus far, I have Jen B, Ginger C, Hanayeta R, Natalie S, and Pete B. Anyone else in this group?
Jody E.
Jody. Great. Okay, let's begin now with Jen B.
Hi, good morning, everybody. This is Jen B, recovered compulsive overeater. I always enjoy listening to your experience, strength, and hope. I'm wondering, as a recovered person, I'm newly recovered. I'm a month old baby in the program. Now, how do you avoid feelings like I've got this? And how do you keep your ego out of the way and remember that you have a daily reprieve through the program and by receiving the promises and that you are not cured? And how do you remember that?
Yeah, thanks, Jen, for that question. That's a great question. So, how do I avoid this? Well, You know, I think one of the things that helps me, what comes right to mind for me, is that on a couple of things. One is, on a daily basis, I am, you know, confronted, I'm glad I am confronted with this fact of the just how progressive, permanent, and fatal this disease is if it goes untreated. And so that gives me some degree of humility, I think, with it. I wouldn't be here, Jen, if I thought I had this. Now, I understand, you know, we often, when we hear certain voices, I know this was the case for me, a little bit less so today, but it certainly was the case early on. I heard these voices and very authoritative voices sometimes, and people that they really talked about what they had accomplished in this program and the number of years they accomplished it. And that, you know, that definitely, when you come into this program so desperate as I was, Jen, those voices for me resonated early on. What I came to learn, but I wasn't working the steps at that point. What I came to realize later on, and I think this goes to your question, is the more I work the steps, and the more that this became a way of life for me, and the more that I experienced the calamities of life and so forth, I think the outcome is a greater degree of humility. I'm glad that the higher power that I believe in today, Jen, I've shared this before, but it just is so true as many times I could say it. So I'm saying it for me as much as for anyone, is the higher power I believe in is not a higher power merely of justice. Because if the higher power that I believed in was a God of justice, then I wouldn't be on this line with you. That I just have too long of a history of pain and creating pain and confusion and manipulation and control and dishonesty and so forth, right? And again, I'm still human, so let's be clear about that. But because of that, I think what I've come to believe is a higher power of grace and mercy. So that, and when I say that, I don't know what someone else says when they might say that, but when I say that, the grace is something unearned. I did not earn this. And that's why I'm repeating it, Jen, because it goes to your question. I did not earn this recovery as though it was, you know, I'm as deserving as any other human being. I think recovery is available to anyone. Regardless, it's not about, as we hear, it is absolutely not about morals and values and so forth. But at the same time, I recognize that I didn't do this for myself. And one of the things, I'll just end this because it just comes to mind, something that Leah had shared with me that I've shared before in podcasts and so forth, which was when I first met her, she was just such a person, she's cringing as we speak, but that said things that I had never heard before. At humble things. And when I thanked her, you may not remember, but I do, when I thanked her, I got a chance to meet her in person. Wow, I got to meet Leah in person. Are you kidding me? And when I met her, she looked at me and she said, "Thank you for noticing God's handiwork." And it didn't resonate with me as some sort of kind of nice little cute thing to say. It was delivered with sincerity and so forth. And it just, you could feel those things, you know, Jen, you could feel that when someone's sincere. And I stole that, you know, as I began to recover. And so the humility, yeah, those are the things that I'm often reminded of. There's so much in the Big Book that shows us humility. There's so many people throughout our history, even today, that are approaching this with great humility. And so those are the people that I focus on. And so that keeps me humble. And no, I'm not cured. What I have, though, is permanent recovery based on the contingency that I remain in fit spiritual condition, which does not equate with perfection, but it does mean that I'm brought into a congruence with God, what I would call my higher power, with God. And so the God that I believe in is perfect, is powerful, is always available. But I'm not and never will be. And no other human being in my mind will be. But that's okay. So I don't know if that helps, but those are the things, Jen, that really helps me to keep humble and not place myself in a, you know, that's why I say that the highest position in this fellowship that we can attain to is servant, the servant. So I hope that helps a bit, Jen.
Thank you, Jen B, for your question. Next up, Ginger C.
Good morning, Ginger C, a real compulsive overeater. Thank you for everyone's service. Larry, you talked a lot about action on your talk. And, you know, I've heard from a lot of people that have gone through relapse, they stopped doing what was clearly working. It works if you work it. So page 88 says, we alcoholics are undisciplined, and so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. You know, it's 365 a year. I got to wash, rinse, and repeat every day. I just have one day at a time. How do you continue doing this? Because it's the actions that we are taking, never what we're thinking. But again, I think we rest on laurels and we slip back and we stop doing these daily important vital pieces to help us stay out of the food. I've heard many people struggle in great ways around this, so I'd love to hear your experience, strength, and hope. Thank you.
Thanks, Ginger. Yeah, that's certainly true, right? We are we're an undisciplined lot of human beings, imperfect human beings. So how do we, you know, what is it? I watch people that continue to do this. I have over the years, and I don't know, maybe I've become that person that continues to do this as imperfectly as everyone else, right? You know, the only perfect, if you will, using that term loosely, is putting, you know, entire abstinence, right? I've got a step one. That's my admission of my powerlessness. But everything else from there is the progress that I make through the program. So to your question, which is how do I, given the fact that I'm this fallible, you know, human being that makes mistakes, that doesn't always show up as my better self, that is, you know, God is that stationary, you know, rock solid, that's how I envision my higher power, but I'm not. So in that, how do I continue to do this? I think I just keep practicing. I practice. And you know, as we've heard it said on this line, and it resonates with me, is which speaks to your question, is that this becomes something, it becomes a way of life. So that program is no longer something I do, but it is who I am. That, again, another thing I heard from Leah and others, a few others. So program is something that I am. So it's in the transmission of this, in carrying this message. That's why, you know, psychiatrists, psychologists, doctors, the good people that are not alcoholic, that are not compulsive readers, they can't help me. Now, they can have great intention to help me and so forth, but they can't. I need another drunk. You know, I need another drunk. I need another compulsive overeater that was lifted, that was pulled, kicking and screaming from the quicksand as they implemented steps that they did not yet believe in. That's who can carry a message of depth and weight for me. And so how I do it is I stay active with step 12. Step 12 is the one thing that saves my bacon. So I'm not eating bacon, right? Step 12 is what keeps me sober. And I just keep doing it now. I'll do it, you know, Ginger, I'll do it soon. I'll do it throughout the day. And I have a life. I'm a dad. I still work. I'm getting a little gray. I'm getting a little, you know, but I got life. I try to find a healthy life balance as best I can. You know, it's not like program is who I am. So it infiltrates. My program infiltrates every area of my life because I continue to practice, and it's in step 10, 11, and 12. 12 specifically, right, Ginger? And when I stop doing that, but you know what? I don't intend to stop doing it because it works. You know, it works. Here's how imperfect I am. My ear pods fell out of my ear. In my passion here. So it works, and that's how I keep doing it. I won't stop. God willing, I won't stop doing it. So with that, I pass. Thanks, Ginger.
Thank you, Ginger C. Next question comes from Hanayeta R.
Okay, hi. Thank you, Leah M., for all your wonderful service. Larry K., I love to listen to you. This was amazing, which I figured it would be as soon as they said it was you that was going to be speaking. I have two questions, two small questions. That you said that there are, I've never heard this before, there are 150 promises and only something was something, and then 10% dealt with food. I hope that maybe you could fill that in for me. The other one was on step 10. You said the problem is us. And then you went on to say something else profound, but my memory is so bad that by the time I wrote down the problem is us, I forgot the rest of it. So I was hoping maybe you could fill those two pieces in for me. Thank you.
Yeah, well, Hana, you know that I like saying Hana. That's one of my favorite names. Hana Yetta, you know that. Yeah, I like saying it. I didn't invent anything, not a creative thought in my brain, but I practice this, and so I just learn from you guys. And so one of the things, you know, I've heard, again, 150 approximately promises. Now, both implicit and explicit, right? Both in the book and could be implied from things. And so somewhere, you know, along, people like us, or many of us that love the big book, our primary text, this roadmap, this blueprint, and dug around even further, because of course we have the 9-step promises that are, you know, we all come to know pretty early, and the 10-step promises, but there are other promises. And so you could Google it, and you could look, friends of Bill W. and so forth. These are all things that will give some of those and lay some of those out, and you can begin to see. It's very encouraging to see all those different, you're like, yeah, this is something that's unfolded in my life, and they're associated with various steps. But what I did say is that from those that were drawn out from many others over the years, they identified that about 14 of those, were only 14 of the approximately 150 promises dealt with the cessation of alcohol, or in our case, food, which struck me as, wow, just a very small, it's about 10%, you know, 9-something%. I'm not a math person. You got to go to Harlan for math questions. But for me, you know, that's about 10%, which again, just strikes me that, you know, that when I got here, like so many of us, we think that food is our problem. And it's really not. And the big book bears that out again and again. We hear it here every day when we study the book. And we hear about our root of our problem, and that selfishness, self-centeredness that we think is the root of our problem, and that ultimately it is a disconnection from a higher power. I need to build a relationship with this higher power that I call God. I need a relationship with God. And it has to be, and that's not what I bargained for when I got here, Hana Yetta. I just wanted a food plan. I wanted to lose weight and then I'll feel better. I wanted to, you know, and I'm no different than so many other people. Now, with regard to step 10, I don't really recall in my old age here, but I know that then in step 10, you know, that I'm going to continue. Now, it's not quite the same. I talked about my mother and my sister and so many others. I don't have the same resentments and fears and so forth. Those have changed. I don't have more of those things than I did when I first arrived. I have much, much less, but I am still human. And the book tells me very specifically that I need to continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And when they crop up, it tells me what to do about it. And so I don't know what I offered after that. But yes, I am the problem. Now, it's not a fault-finding thing, Hana Yetta, that I'm going to just beat myself up, you know, that I'm the problem and I'm a piece of you know what. No, it's just to acknowledge that at the core, it is my disconnection from God. It is my defects of character that give rise to that blockage, those blockages, and I am susceptible to those. And so I am the problem. The food's not the problem. I am the problem. And the steps will enable me to not become the problem, to be brought into congruence with this higher power of my own understanding. And when I am, life becomes more manageable. Not perfect, but much more manageable. So, but I don't know if I offered beyond that, but thanks for the question, Hana Yetta.
Yes, thank you, Hana Yetta R. Natalie S., your turn. Star one to unmute. Natalie.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Larry. I appreciate all that you shared. I'm Natalie S. from Indiana. I'm gratefully recovered compulsive eater. And my question is directly related to your experience in childhood in disease and for a period of years. I have 5 adult children now. And what really resonated in your share for me is the lack of trust that transpired. And God is opening my eyes to see that. And my question is as my children, which are the reason I came back here, become more open to me, and I live recovered and demonstrate that, is there anything in your experience, would it be helpful, would it have been helpful to you in that situation to have your mom come and say, I realize I bred distrust in our relationship and I want to make amends for that, or something of that sort? That's kind of what I'm getting at. If you need further clarification, let me know, but that's kind of the heart of my question, if it makes sense to you. Thank you.
It does. Yeah, it does, Natalie. It's what I will say is, in my experience, okay, it's not, and we can talk at greater length. I'll leave my contact information. I'd be happy to have a more lengthy discussion. But for our purposes and interest of time this morning, what I will say is she didn't need to make amends to me. That's not what, and this made all the difference in the world for me, Natalie. I'm not saying that wouldn't have helped, but you know, my mom, I was blocked off from the sunlight of the spirit. So when I say that, because even if my mom had the wherewithal or was in the position, or even if she did try in her own way to make what we call amends or tried to clean up some of that, I think she did. It didn't break through because I wasn't in a position to be accepting of that. Not until I began to work these steps and have a spiritual transformation, some sort of psychic change, Natalie, some sort of personality change, that was not only sufficient to eradicate the mental obsession, but opened me up to new ideas, emotions, and attitudes, and all sorts of things that the book tells us will happen. So that, to me, looking back now, irrespective of what my mom would have offered, and I know where you're coming from, you're probably thinking, because I'm a parent too, right? It's like I'm always thinking, I'm always thinking, what can I do to make the experience better for Beth, my daughter, right? How can I do it? But that's really me in some ways, for me, playing God more, that I just, so in answer to your question, I think, you know, the trust or I have trust in people today, including my mother and others. I just do. And I never thought that was possible for me today. So when we hear things, Natalie, like recover, 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 you could do 3 things for people, you know, recover, recover, recover. I could do 3 things for Beth, recover, recover, recover. I can do, you know, that's code for just continue to work your program and watch the miracles that God brings about. Watch the miracles, watch the rebirth, and don't think, Larry, that, you know, you've arrived at any point, because God sends these beautiful insights and so my emotions, ideas, and attitudes continue to transform and change. I'm not the man I was a year ago. I'm certainly not the man I was 25 years ago, but I'm not the man that I was before. So I'll talk to you more about that offline if you care to call me, Natalie, but at the same time, it was more about what I could do. And that made all the difference in the world. So it's through the demonstration. So as a parent, what I would say is it's through the demonstration of recovery that I've seen that all these other people that are not in program, it's as though they had psychic changes that coincided with mine. Does that make sense? I hope it does. Thanks, Natalie.
Thank you, Natalie F. Pete B., your turn.
Thanks, Leah, for taking the meeting, for all your service. Larry, thank you so much for your well-thought-out and planned presentation, very effective. So my, the only question, I don't really have a question, I'm interested in getting your perspective. like the big book writes these things that you describe as promises as if they're going to occur. Like we do these things and these are going to occur, which to me implies that they are the results of actions that we take. So is there a difference between a promise and a result, or is it just semantics and I'm mentally masturbating over these ridiculous concepts? So with that, I'll pass.
Yes. No, Pete, I love how your brain works. I love how your mind works, because it's, why do I love it? Because it's a lot like mine. And I words matter to me, and analyzing all that stuff. So yeah, you and I could, maybe we will in LA, if you're out there, we'll have long discussions about these things. I do have a perspective. The result for me is just a spiritual awakening, psychic change, sufficient to drive out the obsession. So I'm brought into alignment with God. Yeah, that's the result. The promises, yeah, we can play semantics with it for sure. I personally, Pete, don't see them as the result of this program. No more so than, I see weight loss as the or weight gain or whatever the issue is for you as a compulsive overeater with the twofold nature of this disease. I don't see that as a, you know, but the result ultimately is a spiritual transformation, I believe, sufficient, yes, to drive out this obsession and bring me into congruence with this higher power of my own understanding. The promises, yeah, we can, look, I'm doing a presentation on promises, so, and these promises, many of them have unfolded, and many of them still unfold, and I see, like when they say, I'll draw kind of a distinction, that we uncover, discover, and discard these defects of character are discarded, and that makes some sense to me, and it's there's some truth to that. At the same time, Pete, I got defects of character, you and me, we got defects of character. So don't some of them, if we look at semantically speaking, don't some of them get mitigated? I don't know what that means, but like lessened, and then some of them go away entirely from my perspective. It's all based on my perspective. And man, oh man, my perspective can be skewed, and it often is, Pete. So yeah, I'd love to talk to you more about it. And you always make me think. So I appreciate you. Really appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Pete B. Jody E.
Thank you so much, Leia. Yes.
Thank you for your service, Leia. And thank you, Larry, for yours as well. I'm so glad I got on the line this morning to hear you. My question has to do with being a sponsor and taking our sponsees through these steps. When you get a sponsee through the fifth step, do you ask them, are the fifth step promises coming true for you? And if they're not, do you have them go back and redo their, take a fine tooth comb and draw it through their fourth step? That's my question. Thank you.
Hey, Jody, it's so good to hear you. I always like hearing your calm voice. I love it. Okay. Connected to calm voices like that, like yours. But anyway, that being said, I'm digressing enormously there. But in answer to your question, so I'm just a believer in the book, and I just follow the instructions. I let the book do the lifting here, right? And so, yeah, I don't necessarily ask them, are these promises unfolding? And as a result of that assessment of some kind, then make a determination whether they need to do X, Y, and Z. God doesn't need my help. That's how I look at it. That's what I say to myself, Jody. God doesn't need my help. Now, that being said, we're holding a lantern. And so, yeah, as we know on page, as I alluded to, on page 75, they pocketed their pride. They went to it. They illuminated every twist of character. every you know, dark cranny of the past. That's an ideal. I didn't do all of that the first time out, or the second or the third. I didn't illuminate everything. And I don't know that my sponsor would have any way of knowing whether I illuminated stuff or not. And of course, when I didn't, once I took that step and didn't illuminate the past and held on to some of these things, because it says withholding nothing, we're delighted. I wasn't, Jody, I wasn't so delighted, to be honest, the first few times I took the fifth step. I couldn't look the world in the eye. I wasn't alone at perfect peace and ease. My fears didn't fall from me, really. I did not feel the nearness of my creator, Jody. I did have some spiritual beliefs prior, but you know, no, I did not go on to have a spiritual experience. And the drink problem, the food problem, did not disappear. Not loosely, strongly, or in any other way. It kept coming. So eventually the pain of the disease, I let the pain do the work. You know, now that's, I would love to shield people from pain. I would, you know what, I'd make a great savior. I'd say that tongue in cheek, right? Because I would just eliminate all pain and all that, and I would be able to interpret things beautifully and just have the intuition as to what's going on and have. But I just don't, Jody. I just don't have the power. I don't have the understanding in order to do that. So I just say I let them sit with it, and I do tell them before we move on to step six, you know, if something's coming up for you, because we need to return home, take that hour, just like my sponsor and others have taught me, take the hour, thanking God from the bottom of our heart that we know this firepower better. Look at those first five proposals. At this point, you're on the fifth step, you know, because we're building an arch through which we can walk a free man or woman at last. You know, so they use metaphors. Our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement? You know, and I just say, if there's anything, if you can answer to your satisfaction, you're not leaving anything out, we'll look at step six. Now, if they are like me and at a place where they did the best they can with the awareness they had, maybe God has them right where they need to be. That's where I come. So I don't feel the necessity to ask any of those questions and that sort of thing. And if not, you know, sadly, they're going to be back in the food. Or if they have great discipline, as some of us do, they may be able to continue to diet, continue to lose some weight or gain, or as the case may be. But they will be miserable, as I was. And so the emotional pain, and the only thing that will relieve that eventually is a big, you know, bowl of something or whatever, or some other type of behavior. And eventually they may come to that conclusion. But I think God will bring them where they need to be on that. So thanks for the question, Jody.
Thank you, Jody. Let's try for one more question. Anyone else have something on their mind? Aaron K. in Michigan. Aaron K., you're the lucky one. Yay! Good morning, Leah. Good morning, Larry. Larry, I think you might be uniquely qualified to answer my burning questions, since you've been very open about the fact that you're a mental health professional. I got a call from a fellow who's really struggling with, you know, her 4-9 process, because she's in therapy and she's getting a message from her therapy process and her therapist that, you know, certain people in her life that she has resentment toward, you know, have personality disorder diagnoses, and she should steer very clear of them and not speak to them. And then, you know, the steps seem to be leading her to, you know, see her part and make an amends. How do you guide somebody who might be involved in kind of an outside issues mental health process, but also trying to work the steps when the directions seem opposed? And that's my question. Thank you.
Well, this would be pretty short. Aaron, and I always love to hear you, Aaron. Just thanks for the question. But it is an outside issue. And yes, I do share, because I share my story. And it's part of who I am, you know. That's one of the things that I do for a living. But mostly I'm mentally ill, right? I say that tongue in cheek, in the sense that I have this malady. And And so I'm an expert at compulsively eating and in program. No, I'm not a, I talk about it as it relates to just issue, you know, sharing my story and some of the different things. But in answer to your question, and I'll be happy to talk with you offline and so forth about some of those things, but I stick to the book, you know, and the book tells me, you know, sometimes, you know, we seek the counsel of outside professionals of all different sorts. If I have a brain tumor, I'm not calling Leah. No offense, Leah. But I'm not. I may for support, but I'm not. I'm going to go to a. And in the same way, we rely on those things. But to your point, I'll talk to you more offline on it. But what I would say, Aaron, is the book is pretty clear. And I remember, you know, that as I said before, you know, God doesn't need my help so much, but I do run into those issues, as we all do. And some of those are beyond the scope of what this program offers. So I'm not, you know, an attorney is not, you know, as an attorney, it's what they do, but they're not in program. They're just a hopeless drunk that's seeking a solution. And same with me here. I don't have any, all this synthetic knowledge I don't use to try to guide and control any of these situations. But I do, Aaron, acknowledge that I run into those things. So give me a ring and we can talk more about it. So thanks, Aaron. And thanks,
thank
Leah.
You. Sure. Thank you, Aaron. Shall we try to squeeze in one more quick question? Quick question. Anybody have something on their mind?
Tony B.
Okay, Tony B, make it fast. Thank you.
Thank you, Leah, and thank you so much, Larry. Just thinking about this timeline, you kind of saying, well, halfway through there's that, halfway through the ninth step, but we've so far to go even then, and you saying it's in God's time, you know, for when these things happened and you became, that you liked your sister and that you liked your mum. Could you talk a bit more about that? Like these promises, they take so long sometimes, it seems to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Tony. Yeah. I think I got it. Yeah. And Tony, I love your, love hearing you on the line. Like all these familiar voices that I get to hear on the line, such a privilege. I think I understood kind of where you were going. I hope I did. So the nine step promises, that's what I found myself. They're, as Pete said, you know, they're not, I don't view them necessarily as results, but they do unfold and they have in my life. And there's a timing and a rhythm to them all. But to your point, you made the point that, they, my goodness sakes, they seem like they take so long. And I think for me, a lot of that had to do with the fact, two things. One, I took forever to work through the steps. I didn't take the steps entirely abstinent for a long time. So obviously it stands to reason that, you know, if I'm still reeking of alcohol or I've got chocolate frosting in my hair, you know, that as I work the steps, I'm not following these instructions. I have not been entirely abstinent. I didn't take the time and seek out the guidance in which to get entirely abstinent, you know, because that's pretty clear on that. I cannot be consuming anything that triggers the phenomenon of craving. But I was oftentimes. And so, yes, the promises, in my case, 5 years. That sounds like a long time. But it wasn't, you know, it happened very quickly. Once I was willing to embark on these steps and I heard an invitation from someone, work the steps quickly. Now, I'm not saying that you have to do anything. These are all suggestions. It's just my experience, Tony. My experience is that once I was entirely abstinent and I embarked on this practical program of action, I was ready to move forward. And I worked the steps quickly as they were intended. If you see the early AAs, they worked it very quickly. Now, no one says you can't go back and dig deep and be the archaeologist and all that stuff. But nonetheless, I needed to cross the bridge to freedom. So truthfully, Tony, it didn't take that long once I was willing to do that. And I have since, as I try my best imperfectly to hold that lantern and guide people through the steps, I see that it happens rather quickly for them too as these promises unfold. Why? Because I see it just as, you know, as the chapter Working with Others tells us. You see their eyes light up. You see, they tell you. No one had to tell me, Tony, you're now recovered. I knew something felt different. I began to follow these instructions precisely and do it quickly. then I can go back. Look, I got years and years. I dig further. All that stuff. Sure, you bet. Love it all. All the workbooks, all that, great. But I need to cross the bridge for freedom. Otherwise, I'm going to be dead. That's a fact. So thanks, Tony. I think that's a wrap, huh, Leah?
Indeed. Thank you, Tony. Thanks to all who posed questions this morning. And, of course, thank you, Larry. It's been an absolute delight. Thank you for your message of depth and weight that you delivered this morning. And so very special to spend this time with you today. Share ID for this morning, 21,977. That's 21977. We're going to close from page 164. It's in a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.